Sheffield Live, made in Sheffield, made by you.
Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082. Do you like Sheffield Live? Why not become a friend of Sheffield Live? Sheffield Live is a community radio station, and friends of Sheffield Live are people in the community who make a regular donation to keep Sheffield Live on the air. Join the Friends of Sheffield Live by writing to friends@sheffieldlive.org or go online to sheffieldlive.org/friends.
Dear Hwich, and welcome to 2 Foot Left on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. It's been a while since I presented the show, so it's great to be back. I've got an Irish special. If you didn't know, Dear Hwich is hello in Irish. And I'm going to be covering a mixture of current Irish record labels and Irish artists who are doing some interesting experimental things. So we've got some tracks from Yara Records, Port Evil Throat, Can't Cope, Department of Energy, Sophia Records and Farpoint Records, amongst others. I'll be back with you just before 11 and I'll go through everything that I've played. Hope you enjoy the show and I'll see you in a bit.
Thank you. comedians, and they're about 10 grey squirrels.
Really?
And they literally, they used to go on the main drive and see the tree. Because that tree is missing, they now go from on headstone to headstone. But if they see you, the first one or two will suddenly stop.
Yeah.
Dead, if you like, on the head, on the headstone.
Yeah.
All the rest try to pile in on top of them because they haven't seen what the traffic block. And that's why I call them the comedians, because they all end up falling off the head of them trying to get on the same headstone. We had a dozen parakeets turned up one October about 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And the parakeets, as you know, are part of the parrot family, but they were reds. I think there was one green, there was a blue, there was even a yellow.
Yeah.
And I knew they had plenty of food up in the oak, but we were worried that the magpies and also the sparrowhawks were going to decimate them.
Yeah.
Now, you will find both in Hyde Park, in Vandel Park in Amsterdam, in Paris, around Versailles, you will find but only the green version. These 12 obviously were let out. We were around asking everybody who owned them and things like that. Eventually, we caught 9 of them, right? And we said, oh, well, the 3 of them probably being got by the sparrowhawk or the magpies. But the following, about 15 months later, we saw we saw 3 of them back. We saw 3 of the missing ones, if you like. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And there were a red, but they had lost their lovely red, and there was sort of more of an orangey or dull red.
Yeah.
And I can't see it now, but I heard one. I heard one last February. They always come more in the winter, from October to. So I don't know whether out of the 3, the 2 of them have gone, but I definitely saw one of them, Robert. And I heard it being chased by the sparrowhawk, but he got away because they usually get him up into the thing. But I did a bit more research, and the other name, because they come, you know, from Indonesia and that in Java, that's where they come from. But their other name is called a Quaker parrot. And they knew where to come, didn't they? There's a lot that, funny enough, unfortunately, I don't get a great variety of small birds because it's our 2 sparrowhawks have a lunch.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
We found in an odd small bird, and it's usually feathers.
Right.
But we know it's the sparrowhawk.
Yeah.
Because it literally swoops down and scoops them up in flight. You know.
Yeah.
And they can't usually get away as quick sometimes, you know, into the top foliage. But they don't follow them too much into the top foliage, the parakeet.
Thank you.
But we, of course, we have the foxes, which are a little bit of vein of my life. We had mother and father, and they had three cubs this spring. And unfortunately, one of the cubs was killed about 3 weeks ago out on the main road. But they've been bringing in odd shoes and boots and slippers and everything like that. I think our total is about 21 odd pairs at the moment, including one lovely yellow football boot. It had never been worn.
Goodness.
And we had one pair of gym shoes, which were practically brand new. They were okay. And we have various balls and of shapes and sizes, but they're usually chewed, things like that. But I don't know what we're going to do, because they've been making holes. We have a copper beach there, but I don't. For once, I don't think it's the. I can't blame the cubs, because it actually goes down underneath the tree and comes up the far side, and that's too long for a. It's just as big as. But other ones are sort of, they've been digging all around the tree roots, or the headstones here, sort of tearing them up. But I don't know what we were thinking more might be a stoat or a weaver. It wouldn't be a pine marten, I don't think, even though it'd be an ideal place. But I haven't heard in this area of a pine marten.
Yeah,
I believe there is one somewhere up the Dodder, all right. But they're coming, making a comeback to pine martens in Ireland. Things, you know. So that's of nature. We used to have ducks, but I wouldn't have ducks now. Because of the ponds, we had ducks. But I'd say the foxes would get the ducks.
Exactly.
We have two wild cats, all right, tabby cats.
Yeah.
And then I have three black cats. So I think they belong to the bungalows across the wall there. But they follow me around quite regularly, and Robert around, you know. Especially if we're by ourselves, they accompany us.
Yeah. That seems to be a big job. I'm talking about two trees which were causing problems. And is that mostly what you would be doing, or would your main interest be sort of historical?
Well, it covers everything from grief management to the grounds. The only thing I don't look after is a beautiful lodge. That's the lodge at the gates. Another member of the committee, Ricky Little, looks after that.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And then Paddy Bewley, he looks after the secretarial side of it.
Yeah.
But I'm here on day to day. Usually I'm here about twice or three times a week. And then if there's an interment, I'll be here. And also to meet people that want to come in and things like that. And of course, we have a busy time in July and August where we open up to the public on a Tuesday. With two tours at 2:30 and then at 4:00 every Tuesday during those 2 months. It's roughly about 20 tours a year, and then we have extra tours if there's anybody that has a party or something like that and want to bring in here a little bit about Quakers and family.
Well, I mean, it's interesting that there's quite a complex program during the summer of tours, because I would speak to quite a lot of people maybe who live in Dunleary and Black Rock, and they're just about aware that there's a burial ground in Temple Hill, but they actually don't know very much at all about it. I mean, that in itself is interesting. I mean, goes
yes.
back to what, the 1830s or something like that?
Well, 1832 was when Monkstown Meeting, preparatory meeting, was set up. And they requested a burial ground a little bit nearer than Cork Street. Because you can imagine in those days a hearse and a horse trotting in to Cork Street, it would take about, I suppose, an hour or over an hour or more. So they requested, could they have a burial ground on the south side? So in 1832, a small committee was set up of about six people to look into the possibility of buying and things like that. And it slowly sort of went on with not much success. We very nearly had a success around the 1850s, where we got a place, we thought, in Donnybrook, where RTE is. But when the absentee landlord came back, he didn't want any burial ground of any sort, and that fell through. And then the committee was had been a good number of years, and managed to co-opt a lot more, and it swelled out to, I think, about 30-odd people, obviously to go and find, and especially people in the neighbourhood.
Yes.
Of both Monkstown Meeting, especially up in Newtown Park Avenue. And in 1859, they found this place. And by 1860, we had our first interment here of Hannah Chapman. And she was interned here on the 6th of March, 1860. And she lived just down the road, or lived in Buddhistown Avenue.
Yeah.
And you must remember that it was the railway that opened up the whole of the south side. And people were leaving some Fitzwilliam Square and things like that. Now, I suppose Mountjoy Square was a bit of a tenement in those days and things like that, or we had become, and people had gone to the other side, if you like, of Merrion Square and Fitzwilliam Square. But then they started to move out because the railway was a very good transport system for bringing people out as far as Dunleary and things like that. So that's why and Monkstown got their wish, if you like. But it took a long time.
Oh, indeed.
It did.
30 years.
Yeah, nearly 30-odd years to get a burial ground. Before Cork Street, We had in Stevens, just off Stevens Green in York Street, where the Royal College of Surgeons is today.
Really?
That was the first burial ground, which was used for about 40 or 50 odd years, from about 1640. But you see, you must remember, why you see our lovely headstone, our lime headstones.
Yes.
From about middle 1700s, right up to about 1880, it was very facetious for a Quaker to announce that he was dead and have a headstone put up. I mean, I could take you to other burial grounds, Rose and Alice, or the one down past the Beehive in County Wicklow, where there's no headstones whatsoever, but we know there's plenty of interments there.
Yeah.
But so really, from this one in Ireland, certainly was one of the first ones to have headstones.
That's interesting.
With the lime headstones. Mm-hmm. But they've always been there. I mean, since Quakers began. I've been to Jordan's meeting outside London, and they're much smaller and narrower going up, the headstones. And I believe, now I don't know there's actual proof, but the Imperial War Graves Commission in 1920 got the idea of uniformity and tidiness from a Quaker burial ground, yes.
Hmm.
And we actually have one Commonwealth War Graves right up at the very top there, which was Alexander Coghill.
Mm-hmm.
He was shot down in the First World War, just 2 months before the end of the war, the armistice, on the 11th of September, 1918.
Goodness.
Yeah. Well, that's just a coincidence. He wasn't a Quaker. It was his wife that was the Quaker.
I see, yes.
And in fact, his sister was Rhoda Coghill. And Rhoda Coghill became a Quaker in 1949. But she was quite well known in the musical and art circles, because she played both the piano and the violin, and was a member of the Radio Éireann Symphony Orchestra.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's she is buried quite a bit away from, about a couple of blocks away from her brother.
Yeah.
But she was only about 14 years of age when he died.
Certainly.
And I remember my uncles telling me that it took Dublin Monthly Meeting a little bit by surprise, and his body actually, in the coffin, were back here within 3 days. When you think it was just the steamship and railways, a lot more efficient in those days. But one of the things that Dublin Monthly Meeting asked, that no sidearms or swords, because remember that time of 1918, an awful lot of people in Dublin were wearing uniforms, military uniforms.
Yeah.
And so it would have been the order of the day at the time attending a funeral to come in military uniform.
Yes.
But they didn't have a firing party. They were asked not to have sidearms or a sword. It was part of the dress uniform or the day-to-day uniform, in fact, at wartime. So, and then we had a very funny, I was looking back in minutes, going back over the years, and it took about another 12 years for them to agree on the headstone and the wording. Because it was a little bit give and take.
Mm.
Because where we have name, that was fine. But I actually will show you the stone as we go out. You'll see RAF.
Yes.
Which is not usually acceptable. And the other thing was killed. We usually have died,
yeah,
literally, on the headstone. So there was a lot of to-ing and fro-ing of letters and everything. And, of course, they really wanted, at the very beginning, a sandstone, which they use to this day in most of their cemeteries throughout Europe and the world.
Yeah.
But we held our ground and got the lime stone headstone, if you like.
Yes.
But the wording had to be, so that was where the main give and take was. But it went on nearly between Dublin and London for about 12 years. About 12 years it went on. This headstone wasn't put up. But the ironic thing is, they actually maintain it to this day and look after that headstone for us. They come in every 2 years and inspect it and make sure it's clean and the lettering is very legible and things like that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And they weren't used for cooking, they were used for light, really, to replace the candle.
Uh-huh.
And the funny thing, we were talking, I was talking with some of the people, and they had just seen Victoria, you know, that series that's going on television and
yes,
TV.
Yes.
And in it, there's actually an episode of about gas plants, because one was installed in Buckingham Palace.
Yes.
So they didn't have mains gas as they have today. They had these Clance, and he obviously took a great interest and literally developed it. But then he went on to, because he was asked by the Ballast Board in Dublin Port to do, could he improve the light at Howth, which he did. Then he started to dabble in the turning mechanism. Then he brought in the delayed mechanism, where it's still used to this day in identifying all the various lighthouses around the world. I remember visiting a lighthouse down off in Cape St. Vincent, off the tip of Portugal. You go down the Alcove, you go up, climb up, you will see a brass plate. Now, it's no longer Edmondson, but it is Barrett's. Uh-huh. And Barrett's are still, to this day, in Quaker hands and producing mechanisms. Headstone, but his dear wife beside him is just plain ordinary. She's not lady, but he was the Barrington Hospitals down in Limerick. Uh-huh. He set up, and he was also Lord Mayor of Dublin. I think around 1865 and about 1875. We have the pigs. Jonathan Pym, he was a liberal, and he represented Dublin in Parliament of Dublin.
Yes.
And we had other few people. There was a lot of Bewleys over there, the original Bewleys. And I'm trying to do some research on Hanks, because which was my grandfather, and also the good bodies of Clara, which were the jute manufacturers. Yes. And sacking, and then there was the good bodies which were the stockbrokers.
Ah, yes, yes, yes.
And of course there was the Jacobs as well.
Mm-hmm.
And see, a lot of people don't realise, like the Cadburys, the Rowntrees, the Jacobs, Huntley and Palmer, they were all Quaker firms.
Yeah.
And they were leaders in their time of looking after their workers and things like that.
Yeah.
Some of them from the late 1800s. And, I mean, Bewley's were literally very good to their staff and looking,
they were, yes.
Looking after them.
Yeah.
I mean, the last ones we... I mean, Mary Bewley... that Mary Bewley was Alfred's wife.
Yeah,
she originally came from England, but she was 102 when she died.
Uh-huh.
And then there was Victor Bewley and Winifred, and then there was Joe Bewley. He was the farmer, if you like.
Yeah,
and his son Roger took over, but then unfortunately, then it. It went into problems with the, as usual, with the pension fund and things like
yeah.
that.